From Illinois Public Media News, this is 217 Today. I'm Kimberly Schofield. It's Tuesday, November 12th. Coming up, farmers are increasingly working jobs away from the farm in order to stay afloat. What's led to the increase in off-farm jobs? That story in just a few minutes, but first, these headlines. Democratic State Senator Paul Faraci has defeated Republican Jeff Brownfield in the race for the 52nd District. As IPM's May Ansar reports, both candidates wanted to protect access to clean drinking water from the Mahomet Aquifer.
The aquifer supplies drinking water to more than 500,000 residents across 14 counties in east-central Illinois. Both state Senate campaigns were concerned that the water source could be contaminated by carbon capture plants that store carbon dioxide underground. Republican Jeff Brownfield says his opponent supported a bill that didn't go far enough.
There was no absolute protection at that time for the Mahomet Aquifer.
Democratic incumbent Paul Faraci disagrees. He says the bill he supported put a two-year moratorium on carbon capture that gave them the breathing room they needed to get started on a bill that specifically protects the Mahomet Aquifer. He introduced that bill last month. May Antar, IPM News.
In honor of Veterans Day, Illinois State Treasurer Michael Frerichs has returned a Purple Heart Medal to the daughter of a late World War II veteran from Decatur. Delbert Tuttle earned the medal while serving in the U.S. Marine Corps. In 1944, he was wounded during the Battle of Saipan in the Pacific Theater. His daughter, Carolyn Peckman, accepted the Purple Heart from Frerichs during a private ceremony last month at the Decatur World War II Memorial.
Dad not only served this country, but he also defended it well by being wounded twice, didn't retreat, hung in there for his fellow men, and he really hung in there until this war was over.
The medal was discovered inside an abandoned safe deposit box that was turned over to the treasurer's office in compliance with state law. Frerichs says his office so far has returned 12 Purple Heart medals to veterans or their families. Artificial intelligence is making an impact on every aspect of life. In education, there's growing interest in how the tool can be used to increase accessibility. IPM Student Newsroom's Diana Jung has more.
Tanya Means is an assistant dean for educational innovation at the University of Illinois. She works with departments to find new ways to transform classrooms. She says AI makes learning more accessible. For example, if people have trouble hearing, a language barrier, or a visual impairment.
So if you're sight impaired, we can use it to create remedial content for you to catch up if you're not at the level of everyone else in the classroom. But we can also make it more complex.
Means will speak at a forum on the future of AI in education, which will take place this Thursday at the College of ACES Library Information and Alumni Center. I'm Diana Jung, IPM News.
Gun control advocates are disappointed in a federal judge's decision to overturn an Illinois law banning assault-style firearms. Mawa Iqbal reports.
Downstate Judge Stephen McGlynn Friday ruled the law, which prohibits guns like the AR-15, is an affront to the Second Amendment. John Schmidt is a former U.S. Associate Attorney General and now works with the Gun Violence Prevention PAC of Illinois. He says he's not surprised by McGlynn's ruling, but he's confident the law will ultimately stay intact.
The legislature has acted perfectly reasonably in drawing the line between other types of guns and semi-automatic machine guns with particularly lethal features and high-capacity magazines.
The Illinois Attorney General's office is appealing the decision to a federal appeals court in Chicago. I'm Mawa Iqbal.
Some Illinois lawmakers are considering how to further protect reproductive and LGBTQ+ rights they feel are threatened by a second Donald Trump presidency. Alex Stegman reports.
State Representative Kelly Cassidy says state lawmakers could update Illinois' SHIELD laws. The Chicago Democrat says they want to prevent other states from using geolocation services to track people who are coming to Illinois for care.
They're not able to track people who are accessing facilities who provide gender-affirming or reproductive health care. That's something that's being negotiated for 2 years, and I think we're very close to a final product.
But Cassidy says there's not much they can do if the federal government enacts national bans because federal law supersedes state law. She expects some momentum this week, but lawmakers might wait until the January lame duck session to pass anything when they don't need as many votes. I'm Alex Degman.
Still to come, what's led to an increase in farmers working off-farm jobs and some efforts among some farmers to add value to their agriculture products. That story is coming up next on 217 Today. But first, meteorologist Andrew Pritchard with your forecast.
I'm meteorologist Andrew Pritchard with your IPM News forecast for Champaign-Urbana. Today, look for sunny skies with a high of 52 degrees and an east wind 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low of 38 degrees, a southeast wind 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy with rain likely late in the day and a high of 58 degrees, southeast wind 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, cloudy with rain likely and a low of 46 degrees, southwest wind 10 miles per hour. And for Thursday, mostly cloudy with a high of 54 degrees and a northwest wind 10 miles per hour.
Next time on The 21st Show, Speaker of the Illinois House, Chris Welch, about the election and how Illinois is preparing for the second Trump administration. Plus, Indigenous writer and environmental historian Roslyn LaPierre about the election and President Biden's recent apology for the government's role in running boarding schools for Native Americans. I'm Brian Mackey. That's next time on The 21st Show. Join us.
You're listening to 217 Today. I'm Kimberly Schofield. You might have an image of a farmer in their tractor or with a bucket feeding livestock. The reality is, farmers can often be found in office cubicles, driving school buses, or stocking shelves. That's become much more common in the last 50 years. Today, more than 85% of farm families rely on off-farm income. As Harvest Public Media contributor Teresa Holmesey reports, that's because farmers often need another part-time or even full-time job to stay in business.
The Leelanau Peninsula, known as Michigan's Pinky, extends for 30 miles into Lake Michigan. The rolling hills and lake's insulating effect makes this place ideal for growing fruit. Cherry farmer Phil Halstead says the landscape never gets old, but growing cherries is becoming more difficult.
I don't go to Vegas because I gamble every year. Cherries are so, so risky.
After several tough years, Halstead has transitioned his farm to a U-Pick model, where people pay to harvest their own cherries. He also plans to cash in on the region's tourist economy by opening campsites on his land. Halstead says his family made those changes after years of working part-time jobs and still struggling to make ends meet.
2 years ago, I was ready to throw in the towel, and my wife said, I'm not. And I love my wife, and I follow my wife. And so it was like, okay, I got to figure this out. So together, we're trying this new business model.
Only 37% of farmers held a primary job off the farm in 1974. Today, roughly 85% of family farmers rely on other jobs to support their livelihoods. U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack says the increasing dependence on off-farm income is causing more and more small farms to sell.
So the question I think we ask ourselves is simply, why is it that the farm family has to work multiple jobs? Why can't the farm work harder and generate more farm income?
Profit margins are thinner for small farmers. The cost of inputs like seed, fertilizer, and labor have generally gone up, while prices for ag products are lower. Agricultural economist Daniel Munch with the American Farm Bureau says competing in a global market means farmers have to keep scaling up.
We're never in the position of saying it's bad that farms are getting bigger, right? They're just doing it because that's what they need to survive in the marketplace we have now, which is a harsh reality.
In Nebraska, Vern Jansen grows corn and soybeans and sells to a local co-op. He says the good news is that he's debt-free, but he likely won't break even from his crops this year.
With an average yield and a below average price, it doesn't pencil out.
Jansen is also a substitute bus driver. While initially it wasn't for the extra income, now he says he's glad to have the job. He says farming is like college football in Nebraska.
We have had a terrible time for many, many years, but the thing that keeps us going as football fans is there's always next year. And that's, I think, what keeps a lot of farmers going. There's always next year.
While farmers are used to the ups and downs, some are exploring ways to generate more income from their goods. That could help small and mid-sized farmers diversify and survive, says Jay Arbuckle, an Iowa State University sociologist.
You know, differentiating, adding value to a product is a way to earn a price premium. Berries turn them into jam, or pigs turn them into ham. Adding a second or third crop that has more local market or a more niche market.
Or if it's an option, farmers can turn to agritourism, like Phil Halstead in Michigan. He points to an area where visitors will soon be able to set up campsites.
So we have a platform overlooking down below.
Even if cherries don't pay, Halstead says he doesn't want to see local orchards sliced up and turned into subdivisions.
Once that house goes up, it's gone. It will always be housing. We're trying to avoid that. We love this land, and the land is special.
Halstead says in order to preserve farmland, we need to ensure farmers can stay in business. For Harvest Public Media, I'm Teresa Holmesy.
Harvest Public Media is a collaboration of public media newsrooms in the Midwest and Great Plains. That's it for today. 217 Today is produced by Stephanie Mosqueda. Reporting today contributed by May Antar, Kulsoom Khan, Diana Jung, Mawa Iqbal, Alex Degman, and Teresa Holmesy. Music by the Kilbourne Alley Blues Band. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. I'm Kimberly Schofield. 217 Today is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening, stay safe, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.